5-acre parcel that is owned by multi-ownership. Mr. Gonzalez in the audience, you can elaborate on that. And he's requesting annexation to the district to provide the water and sewer services to this area. We received a letter, actually with a phone call from county staff saying we're going to have zero taxes, and I request them to put it in writing. And so they did, and basically staff responded that it was unacceptable to the district to have a zero tax rate because we provide certain services, even though the county does not think so, to the community. We're a community operation, and I say maybe 10 to 15%, maybe 20% of my time. In fact, one day about over half of it was spent on county matters, straightening out county things. People are coming in the office inquiring. In fact, I had a phone call this morning about a county matter, get things straightened out in the TSA 1. And I had to call county staff and explain to them the procedure, and they said, well, they just missed it, so they'll start doing this now. Anyway, there's numerous things like this going on all the time. At the district, mainly because we're probably the community center, and people have problems, they come to the local district to find out problems, county and district-wise. And the county responds, since we're a small agency, to county problems and directs them in the proper way or tries to resolve or solve county problems for them. And a small instance that a lady called up about seeing the curb red, I think I mentioned this previously to the board. And so we took, you know, all by horns and solve the problem very economically for the county and for the district, and it was good PR operation. The county has this item on the their board agenda for the 11th, and we can start the 30-day time period to negotiate. And district legal staff has been talking to a number of people and they have some comments on this.
Correct. The county is taking a position, I think, basically out of their economic frustrations with the state, coming up with a policy that a zero property tax transfers on annexations, especially if it pertains to what the county characterizes as enterprise operations like water and sewer. And I think DePomo is going to be the test bed for this zero property tax philosophy. Staff is prepared to negotiate with the county as required by the code. However, the board will have to take a relook at annexations, at least from a financial perspective, if the county will not negotiate property tax. I think what the county is, again, I think this is driven by their own economic frustration from the state, but the long story short of it is that property taxes were developed to support community activities. The community in Napomo, this district is, as far as providing governmental agents, governmental services, is the community. I think also the county is kind of doesn't see that it's our water system that supports their fire department. You know, and if there's a fire, it's our fire. Even if it's in district or out of district, it's basically our water system that supports it. Or as Doug has pointed out, how much time staff spends on non-water sewer-related issues and, you know, just to make government more efficient, to have a place to come to. So we're hopeful that we can educate staff, county staff, to this plight, and we're hopeful that the Special District Association will provide us some assistance, too, in bringing this to county staff's attention.
And as he knows, there are fire protection providers that you mentioned briefly before, right?
Right?
That's a key
factor. We oversize our water lines. Our water lines are depreciated over a period of time. We don't reinstall smaller lines because that's all the water system needs. We install water lines to size that fit the needs of the fire department. We also install and maintain their fire hydrants, or the fire hydrants, which is typically part of a fire department, not a water department. So we're hopeful that we can educate some people.
Can I hear the
roof
bracket ask a question at the Horton Island thing?
Yeah, she also indicates that if the road running meeting out there.
Well, right.
I missed that. I gave her praise, too.
Yeah, I see. Yeah, you didn't look at it.
Then you have to teach. Okay, board questions or comments?
I had one or two. The one that's before us tonight, the annexation 15. Now, in the summary to the board, which is the first item in our package on number 6, it says a new doll is 10 acres. Later on in the package, like page 4, so something is that the county of San Luis Obispo letter to Mr. Jones regarding the new doll annexation. The statement in there, it says, proposed to be expanded by at request of Ed Sauer and Gary Knoyer. So my question is, the action that's before the board tonight, is it Newdall only, or is it Newdall, Sauer, and Knoyer? And does the 10 acres include Sauer and Knoyer? Or what's the deal here?
Well, basically it's on that, based on the April 28th letter from Paul Hood, file annexation number 15, which I think is talking to Mr. Newdall. Mr. Newdall's in the audience, you might expand on the aspect of it.
Okay. Yeah, Mr. Newdall, would you like to say anything to the board?
Yeah, I'm Bob Newdall. I'm the owner and developer of the corner of Jefferson Hill there. I have a 5-acre parcel there that we've been struggling with for several years to try to bring it into development. And we have chose to go ahead and attempt to put it before the LAFO for proposed annexation of the district. For this reason, the reason we put in our portion only is because we are contiguous to a previous annexation which we had already completed, and it seems like that's the most logical thing to do, take it on a piece-by-piece basis, although keeping in mind that talking over with Doug Jones, that we would have to come up with a master general plan of how the sewer and water would be served throughout the whole area. But in order to get the thing off the head center, we were trying to go ahead and put this together, and then it seems that we ran into this zero taxation thing that I know nothing about. All I know is I pay my taxes, and I pay them to the county as well as anything that I would owe to the district. And I'm a taxpayer, so I am, and I'm just looking for a service from the different agencies that I pay the taxes to. And I'm kind of an injured party, you know, caught in the squeeze right here. And I expect to see my process to be further along than it is today, but it seems like it's been held up because of this. And of course, I talked it over to Ted Jones, and I can understand where you folks are coming from, and I agree with you. But what I would like is, well, the reason I'm here tonight is to learn, you know, what's going on. I really didn't understand thoroughly what it is. And what I'd like to ask or see if we could accomplish is where we get this thing off the dead center, even if we, in other words, enter into the agreement under protest or something where maybe it could be mitigated at a later time. So that was kind of my question.
Now, you just said 5 acres.
Well, my particular annexation is 5 acres, but my next-door neighbor is also joined with me. So the
Hastings?
Not Hastings. I wasn't prepared to.
The Newdall annexation, half of it's Mr. Newdall, and the other half is other property owners for the roads.
Yeah, what was those folks saying? Anyway, it's adjacent property, and makes it then, of course, that makes it continuous with the Hastings annexation.
That's correct.
Well, that has been approved.
It's been approved by LAFO, but
not
by the board.
It has never got to the board because of some financial obligations that LAFO put in. Conditional. Has not been met.
Okay. So your portion is 5 acres, but the annexation number 15 includes 10 acres total.
Yeah.
Yours and 5 of
them. Total part. I think Hazen just got around 5 of
them. Okay.
So we have to start somewhere. You know, you talk about all these large numbers in growth and large numbers in loss and so forth. Sold on the market right now, they wouldn't go anywhere anyway. I think the logical thing is the slow growth and the slow method and go ahead and put this online, you know, as it's needed, and let the developers go ahead and develop it as needed, and come up with a master plan so that everything fits as it comes together. So I've been in this business a long time. I can see here that you folks are getting
bombarded,
pushed around by the county, and you all know what the answer to that is. So one day you might do it. I know what the answer is. We did it 30 years ago in River City, and we've been pretty happy ever since. Well, that's the only way. That's the only way.
Happy with our name.
Destiny.
Do any board members have questions for Mr. Newdall while he's up? Thanks for clearing that up.
Thank you, and I certainly appreciate the consideration.
Yeah. Mr. President, staff response to Mr. Hood's May 24th letter was that the taxation issue needs to be clarified before it's proceeding on the citizen.
It's true that the tax transfer negotiations always occur before annexation requests, right? That implies, you know, that the district's going to annex, I think. It sounds like it. I mean, when you go negotiate a rate and then you talk later about whether we're going to annex it or not, I mean, seems like a fast backwards principle. I know you have to know the rate going in to see how lucrative it is.
Well,
to see if it's viable, but
I don't know the procedure, but if you don't come up to agreement or don't negotiate a tax rate, then the proposed annexation is off because no transfer has been made.
Right.
Yeah.
I have a couple questions.
First, Cal Cities, where are we with that? They serve this area now.
No, this area is outside Cal City's proposal.
Just outside Cal City?
Yeah.
Because Hazel Lane, Cal City's, is in there because I went riding my little bicycle one day and talked to someone. It's in there.
It's in Vane is where it is. The part, the other end, even though they may have intensive search from Cal City, it's outside their jurisdiction.
Now, just say for instance, we annex it, because there's some streets back in there, not where Noodle is, but over further, Cherokee and all those houses are back there on 1 acre lots, and that stuff that Knoyer has that comes down, they're all 1 acre lots. And those people that bought all those houses in there figured they were buying it for a 1 acre tract. Okay. Now, if we provide that with sewer, that's going to get chopped up into 10,000 square foot lots. So all these people that figured they were getting 1 acre house sites now going to wind up with infill. The 5 or 6 houses around them are one big project of a whole bunch of stuff. And they're probably going to get hit with a $3,500 connection fee, right? None of which they figured they were going to get when they moved in there. Because I went around on my little bicycle and banged on all the doors I could bang on a Sunday and Saturday afternoon, and none of these people, most of them, didn't know what was coming, and when they found out what was coming, they about jumped up and down, almost broke my little bicycle.
Well, Mr. Sowers went around and contacted people and had a petition signed by the majority of the people out there requesting annexation.
I don't know. Maybe we're not talking to the same people. That's
he's talking to the property owners.
Well, the ones that live in like when in Knoyer's tract there, they know the 1 acre tract. Those people didn't know that it was coming.
Knoyer's tract also, and those people in Knoyer's tract are signed.
And then I get down to the second thing. To be annexed into the district, you got to have one or two things. You either got to bring water into the district,
mm-hmm.
or you got to be a hardship like we were in Summit State. Or am I just reading the wrong thing?
Well, the policy is there.
where does the opinion of the PUC regarding service by California cities water, how does that factor in here?
Yeah, we're going to have to give them money.
A copy of an opinion here. Does that affect this project?
Yes.
It's talking about 88 new customers. Now, what customers would those be on what parcel?
Well, I think the 88 are someone else. Is the 19 that on the next paragraph something is the
Mesa Royale.
Yeah, the Simmons Lane proposed annexation on your exhibit there.
Okay, and the proponent of that is who? That would not be Udall, Knoyer, Hastings, or it's another one.
It's Knoyer and it's ours.
Okay.
And that area now has been approved by the PUC for service from California City Water
Company. Right.
We presently serve, I think, parcel 24.
Can I get a copy of that opinion? Not now, but at your convenience, instead of a 14-page opinion. Okay.
What I have a problem with is that this is going to add maybe 300 houses or 300 services. Okay, 384, something like that. Okay.
That's the whole thing.
Right. Then right around the corner, if this thing flies over on the story, you're looking at another 700. So you're looking at basically 1,000 more services for water we don't even have. I mean, if we had the water, that would be nice. But we don't have the water, we haven't got a clue where it's going to come from.
Temperature is going to find this problem.
Does that make sense?
We use some water.
That makes sense to me.
I don't know. I mean, we're supposed to be able to provide water for all these people, but there's just, unless we get some supplemental water or if something happens, you know, the industrial part here is out there in the foothills someplace.
Plus two,
there's no way we can serve all this stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that brings up conceptual water. I've been contacted by the Royal Granny Cemetery District. They're looking at property within the district and acquiring it if we provide service, and they are a major user of water. So, you know, if that comes, if they want to, and then the problem is, of course, that, you know, if they go ahead and take an option on the property or buy the property and come to the district and then say, hey, we want to supply you.
In the district?
In the district, yeah.
They want to build a cemetery?
You know, and then you come into the situation, and this is the sidetracking that, you know, wherever they put the cemetery, you want to live next to the cemetery, or you want to live next to 1 acre parcel, or 10 acre parcel, or 10,000 square foot lot, it all gets to a personal aspect of how the whole thing runs.
Quiet.
That's
fair.
There's a Halloween.
Yeah.
But, you know, those are sites, but but the overriding issue of this thing is a zero tax thing. Whether the board wants to address the board of supervisors on the 11th, which is next Tuesday, I'm not sure that the total administrative aspect. I think the council's been talking through LAFCO on the procedure, but my understanding is it comes before the board and starts the 30-day negotiating period, which would probably come back to the board on August 8th. It's just less than 30 days, but within 30 days, whether we make a presentation to the board on the 11th to get their attention or do it on the end or work with staff in between, those are all a number of different options.
Yeah, I just don't want us to, our representation at the supervisors or at the meeting to be misconstrued as being, if you give us a 7.3% assessed value of improvements, we're going to annex it. I don't want that condition to go forward. You know, I see the property tax negotiations as more minor of the issues. So we've got the growth issue, we've got the groundwater management plan issue, which is something we talked about a month ago and forgotten about, I guess.
Right, so coming up on August 6th.
We have a presentation still, right? And those are things that
seems to be, to me, at least we have to get off the ground before we do a lot in the area of annexation, before I feel comfortable with it. Does the board members have anything they want to add? Or
I think the sewer property tax should be a separate thing, because, I mean, there's going to be other annexations down the road. I don't want to think that.
And unfortunately, we've accepted zero before.
No.
Which was not a smooth move.
The intent on that was that, and here again, the district looked at the total picture, and I understand it's going to the previous administrator, and it was trying to find a win situation for everyone involved, including the county, on the financing aspect. It says that all the money from the district going straight to the county, probably a lesser amount would be taken from the county. And so say, okay, well, you guys, we won't take any tax, you keep it off, there'll be less impact on the county with the condition we come back and renegotiate, but they forgot about the last condition. That's the problem.
Do you plan at the next meeting, John, to make your presentation regarding district benefits and providing service and all that stuff?
Yeah, but from listening to district board, I'm glad that we went through this, because I was going to be a little more adamant about property taxes, but what I understand is that if we do go down there, that we just tell them says that the concept of zero property taxes is basically unacceptable to the district. However, but it's not the sine qua non to this particular annexation. I mean, whether we get the property taxes or not on this particular annexation, just the whole concept of arriving from a zero position is unacceptable on any annexation.
And one other thing, I think we brought to the county, since they're looking at this as legal counsel mentioned, if they're in a tax squeeze or a revenue squeeze, and would you see simple economics or business economics, would you rather have 100% of one parcel or 92 or 93% of four or five parcels? I mean, without doing the math, the secondary one is a greater financial benefit. And if that's the county looking at this, they ought to look at it more of a business or economic approach than what they're doing. But maybe there's underlying aspect of the political philosophy.
Yeah. You know,
it
seems that between April 28th, when he wrote that first letter stating that the county was looking at the proposal about the non-tax, then in his May and June letters, he didn't mention it again. What happened in the interim? Did he have some conversation with you or other people?
The response to the first letter saying it wasn't acceptable, and the second one said the tax issue needs to be resolved before proceeding on these other matters.
So I met with Mr. Hendricks and Mr. Hood specifically about the zero tax that the district wasn't going to roll over and have the district pretend that it would not be a consideration for annexations. But my gut level feeling is that my pitch fell on deaf ears.
So you don't read into the May or June letter anything because he didn't discuss it?
No, I don't. Okay. What I see this all being based on is driven by economics. And as the property taxes are being transferred to the state coffers, the county is getting less, and the county doesn't want to raise taxes, but what they're actually doing is they're driving the thought of raising taxes or necessity on raising taxes onto the special districts and the cities, because they're kind of vacuuming out the property tax revenues. The logic is pretty obvious and it's pretty clear and it's pretty solid. If the county is getting less property taxes, then they can argue that they should give less property taxes to the special districts or the cities. It's just natural if they're going to take that position and make that argument.
Well, they just announced that they had a 3% increase 1995 over 94 or 95 96 over 94 or 95.
And as Mr. Bordenaro pointed out, he thinks that the property tax shifts are over. I'm hopeful, everybody's hopefully right, you know, that we've bottomed out on that loss. We're going to have to wait. You know, we're in the budget right now at the state level, and that's going to be the proof of the pudding, so to speak, is what shakes out of this year's budget.
Okay. Well, I think we're unprepared tonight to make any type of action on the annexation. This board is probably split on annexation. I don't know where we're split out now, but we've been 2-3, 3-2, 4-1, all various gamuts of being split on annexation issues, and we're embarking on this groundwater management plan, which is hopefully going to give some insight into this. So forgive us for holding you up. We're still trying to formulate our direction here. Probably that's the biggest issue that's facing us for the next few years, that and supplemental water. I, for one, can't separate annexation from the need for supplemental water.
Right.
I feel more like Director Blair does on that issue. And I feel like I'm being premature by considering annexation, but I don't have my water issue solved. Yes, we need to pursue that annexation, the negotiation, I think. Is everyone in agreement that the negotiation, you know, at 0% is not a negotiation, it's a relinquishment of all tax revenues. You know, that's always their going-in position in the last few.
What has the previous rate been based upon in terms of percentage? Would you get 15%,
20%? No, it varies between 7 and 8%, which is the going tax of that area.
So it's down to 7 or 8.
Right.
10% of the increase worth of
time. And this is the increase. We move in, and if the value doesn't increase, no gain tax. Whatever value increases, that increment, we get property tax.
Yeah, I see.
So if you annex a total subdivision, you get the tax rate, but you really don't get any tax unless it's inflation.
Do you want or need more district representation at the next meeting, the Board of Supervisors?
Well, we were discussing maybe a member from the board might want to make a presentation on the 11th.
Well, this is how it's going to show up on the, if it follows tradition on how these things show up on the county agenda. It's going to show up as a consent item. In other words, it's not going to show if we, the district is going to make a presentation on it, it would have an opportunity in two different ways. One, of course, is always during public comment. You could get up and speak to the issue. The second one is to request a board member to pull it off of the consent item as a consent item and bring it before the Board of Supervisors that way to have a discussion with it. Now, unfortunately, the agenda doesn't come out until tomorrow. It won't come out till late tomorrow. I went down to the county today and checked on it. So as soon as I get the agenda, I will fax it into the district so the directors can take a look and then get a pretty good feel for two different things. One, when is the public comment section going to be? Because it doesn't happen traditionally where it happens in most meetings, either at the beginning or the end. They put it kind of in the middle someplace to, some people argue, limit public comment.
After the lunch break.
But the other, and we also know where the consent calendar comes up so that you could go down. I'm going to request, I've been instructed to request Ruth Brackett to pull it off of the consent calendar. And I will probably give her a call tomorrow to arrange that and to discuss this item with her, the reasons why the district is disappointed in the county's position as far as negotiating property tax transfers. If you really think about it, it's our sewer system that allows the property taxes to be increased because it increases density, but yet they're not willing to share what the increased revenues. They just sort of like, I'm probably going to get too much like Doug here. It's like the kid that only likes to scoop off the frosting and the cherries off the cake and forget the cake, you know.
Okay.
Well, anyway, if that's the case, you know, does the board member, maybe the president of the board, want to make address the board supervisor?
I have a real job. I mean, I'll make.
I could do it if I knew what it was. No, but I mean, I could go say something to them if I knew what it was. But the thing is, you get down there at 2 o'clock. They tell you the public comment's going to be at 2 o'clock. Then if they see you out there, if they know somebody's going to get up, they dance around and put it off or do something else, and it comes up at 3:30.
We're going to get the agenda over to the district tomorrow.
The public comment regarding the consent agenda will be right around 3:30 in the morning after the awards, what they give out, that sort of stuff, between 8:30 and 9 o'clock. The public comment period is something which is not on the agenda, is at 2 o'clock.
Yeah, but I've gone in there at 2 o'clock, and by the time they get around to it, it's 3:15.
That's usually the first time on the thing, 2 o'clock.
We won't know for sure if we need to go after the CJ agenda.
I'll have it tomorrow.
I'll give you my fax number afterwards. Maybe if you fax it to our office, maybe at least it's your fax or somebody. Any other questions or comments on this item? I'm seeing no specific action except maybe representation at next week's meeting.
I'd just like to ask one question, and that would be, what is your normal markup on doing business with any group, whether it's 10, 15, or 500? Do you try for a specific figure?
Markup?
Well, yes, your profit.
We are non-profit.
We're non-profit.
Yeah.
But I know you're non-profit. What is your profit, though? What is it percentage-wise? It is a profit.
Of course, frankly, what, you know, when you take a look at a special district or a governmental agency and you see profit, what you don't see profit. What you see is money in a depreciation fund to pay for. We don't make a profit in return to our ratepayers. I mean, it's really true. I mean, you can look at it, you can say, is a district accumulating more money than it's taking in? And you can typically say over a period of time, the answer to that is yes. But that money is going into a depreciation account to pay for major capital expenses or repairs. It's not like you accumulate money in excess of that.
But the depreciation just started this year. And if you look at the balance sheet for the last 5 years, there's money there that wasn't there the first of the 5 years.
There's
got to be a profit.
There's an accumulated depreciation on the balance sheet, even though we just started an account that says depreciation. There's a couple million dollars in accumulated depreciation.
Yeah, I know.
And there should be cash to match that. So, you know,
but anybody looking at that would say, for an unprofitable business, it's a hell of a profitable game.
I would disagree with that. From my view.
It's an unfunded mandate.
So it just seems to be that if you have an alternative and you can make money, and then maybe you don't need that 6 or 7% tax.
Where the district makes money, if you want to take a look at it from a business point of view, is just that you can make a pretty substantial argument, as long as you have the resource base, that the more customers you have because of the scale of the economy,
right,
is that's going to cost each individual ratepayer less. In other words, you know, the more you have, you can parcel it out, but it makes one giant assumption when you use that economic model. And that is that you have the resources. Because if you don't have the resources, that model doesn't work, because everybody ends up getting less for the same cost rather than everybody get, you know, the model kind of flips itself over.
So no, we're not going to admit that we make profits.
I understand.
Would you like to ask again?
So we'll get back to the board on when the agenda comes back up.
Okay. I would consider making a presentation after talking.
Yeah, you can do it.
My computer is okay with the rest of the board. As long as you tell me exactly what you're saying, what not.
Yeah, well, Mike will be there. I will be asking too. I need to take my daughter to the cross-country camp.
Okay.
So he might be on yours.
Okay, much of the dismay of Mr. Newdall is no action on item number 6.
You might want to be there at the board.
I definitely will be there. I appreciate the consideration. I'm here to learn.
Well, we thank you for coming and waiting through a very lengthy agenda for your item, which you got no.
I'd like to make a comment too. See, what the county's done is they've targeted a lot of growth in the fall. They haven't given us the means to get the water to supply that growth. We need the state water turnoff so we can get supplemental water. Then we're not going to get state water because that's gone. They sold that to somebody else. But somewhere down the road, we're going to need water to support all this growth we've got. I mean, and I'm not against growth, but Gene and I both live in Summit Station. We know what it is to get up in the morning, turn the water faucet on, and there's nothing there. And
we're talking about last Sunday.
Yeah. Well, that can happen to the whole district if we get too far extended. And it's just, they can give us some help to make sure that the reserve is there for everybody. I mean, that's what we're here for, make sure everybody has water. And they're like saying, build it, but they're not saying where the water is supposed to come from. That's,
and build it. If you build it, it will come.
They will come, yeah. If you build it, they will come. Except for the freeway, they don't want to expand it.
Okay. If you don't have anything further, Mr. Jones or Mr. Seitz,
okay.
Move on to item number 7 then. This is a possible revision of the district water billing codes. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, at the last meeting on June 7th, that brought the ordinance together to the board comments, and the board had some input, and basically the changes were involved that the tenants, along with the property owner or a qualified manager, would receive the bills, and billing statements will be sent out on a bi-monthly basis, and the bills will remain due in 30 days, and that the district will discontinue the refund deposits, the turn-off deposits, and adjust the turn-off charge to $50, and in discontinue of service, we would follow the government code guidelines based on this aspect. And the ordinances before you is for your review and comments, and would be not for public comments, and then be set for introduction and probably set a public meeting for the 19th to review it for the second reading. And this is the first reading.
Okay.
There's a section in there that says where the meter reader or your staff can go on to people's property if we deem that there's a problem.
Right. That's the
waste of water and that kind of stuff. Yeah.
Okay. Right. That's on page 13.
Authorized inspectors, agents, and employees of the district who are furnished with, carry upon request, display appropriate evidence of identification, shall have the right to enter and access all at reasonable times into, above all, the buildings, premises, or any part thereof for the purpose of reading the meters, inspecting anything. Okay. The meters are at the street. Anything from the street to the house is the property owner's. I got a real problem with authorizing people to come tracing through people's private property. If you feel that there's really a problem and the meter's going crazy, then shut the meter off, get a hold of the property owner, and go in there and do it. But I can't see it where all these people can come up there unless the meter's inside the people's property.
There's two things right here. And I understand your concern, but I think it's a matter of how this would operate as to oppose what's in here. This language is put in here to allow the district, in order for a district employee to go on somebody's property without the permission of the property owner is tantamount to a search in violation of the Fourth Amendment. Okay. So what this does is it gives, if we had a inspector that thought there was a cross connection, an illegal connection, or they wouldn't allow them on to read their meters, and what Doug is talking about here is the district is looking at putting in a new system where you read it by telephone lines, and that's the wave of the future. What this allows the inspector of the district to do is to go in and get what you call an administrative search warrant, which is the same process that a sheriff or a police officer would go through. So it's the situation would never arise where an inspector goes on the property, knocks on the door and says, you have to let me in. Here's the ordinance. The guy's going to, business, well, we think you have an illegal connection here. We're here to inspect. Can we come in? The answer is no. You can't come in. Then you'd go down before a magistrate or a judge and get an administrative search warrant with all the due process issues that the sheriff would have to go through or the police department would have to go through. But they could look and say, here's our code section that authorizes us to make these type of inspections. You know, so please give us a search warrant so we can go in and take a look. That's basically what it is. It's not
blindly walking in.
Yeah, you don't walk in.
Well, that's the way I read this.
I know.
That's what it said to me, like with PG&E, the meter's on the house, so they have to come up to the house.
Yeah, but see, you can refuse to, you can refuse, what they'll do is they'll just say, that's fine, we'll just cut, you know,
right, but like
you don't
with
get
gas,
our service.
Gas and, well, some gas is on the house, other people's gas
right.
isn't on the house. And, water is in the street.
See, the difference is, it's kind of a minor one, but it's something that's really coming into the forefront is the environmental issues on cross connections and plumbing, especially for the sewer system and for your water system, that you don't backflow. If you ever take a look at modern plumbing these days, they all it's either a master one or there's one on the outside that's an anti-siphon device. So that you can't backflow what you have in your hose back into the system. And there's cross connections on sewage and there's cross connections on water systems. And there you have public health issues. Whereas if you can't go in and read the electrical meter, you know, there's no cross connections, there's no health issues to society in general. This just allows for those types of inspections.
And there's gray water systems coming in being known.
Right, yeah,
gray
water is
really
a good one.
Yeah, that's easy for the inspector to catch that one. So,
yeah.
Usually.
And there's aftermarket. Anyway, this isn't, in response to your question, this isn't intended to be the badge that allows the inspector in. It just gives him the authority to go get an administrative search warrant. If you
shouldn't
refuse
it say
access.
That?
Well, I don't think it would do.
I mean, it just, to me, the way it's written, it just implies that the guy can come in there. And the way that says, it says it employs him to come in there and look, like if the people aren't home.
Well, yeah, but the property owner says, no, you can't come in.
Yeah, but the property owner isn't home. The property owner can't tell him that, but this tells him he can come on to people's property.
We're hoping that our inspectors would.
I understand that, but this is empowering the guy to do it.
Well, maybe the place to address that would be in our policies and procedures manual as opposed to in our ordinance, where it would say that in our district policies.
No, but this could say authorized inspectors and agents employees of the district are furnished to carry upon whatever after contacting the property owner. In other words, before they come tracing up there, maybe they should call the property owner. You might have a dog, if nothing else.
I think that would confuse it even more. I think this is very well written. It certainly tells exactly what they're going to do. If they don't allow them in, why, they have access to somebody that will create the allowance to get in. And it makes sense, I think.
I don't know. To me, it allows them, I think, to go in when the person isn't there. And I
it doesn't have to be a Fourth Amendment be a search in violation of the Fourth Amendment.
Yeah, search and seizure.
Well, this overall laws is supersedes this thing. So.
Right. It reads a little heavy handedly, I think, too. But I don't think it can.
Okay.
It does appear that way, but
I don't think it can supersede the.
This explanation kind of takes care of my my description of the.
Because it won't supersede any rights they have already. I had a couple questions. Just smattered through here. I noticed in a couple areas too, and this is just a general comment. Whenever this thing achieves final form, we want to make sure that the hierarchy of number, letter, number, parentheses, and all that is cleaned up, because there's a lot of conflicts. There's a couple areas where you have a number, and then a letter, and then a subsection, and only one entry. You know, you don't need two levels of breakdown if you only have one number. So.
Do you have specific ones?
Yeah, I can show you, for instance.
Sure.
But I didn't want to.
Well, we're hoping this is the final form for introduction tonight, so we'd like to.
What, the gray and everything in it?
Well, it doesn't matter. The gray is.
You push a button, it comes out.
Yeah, it'll come back at your public hearing meeting.
Okay.
The gray in there.
Okay, you asked for it.
No,
I'm just going to give you a few. First of all, on page 2, that. It says 303030B. Should probably say District General Manager, and probably ought to be capitalized. Parenthetical capital F there towards the bottom, and it's followed by a C.
Yeah.
You should choose the as a number of letter alternation that needs to occur. That should probably be a number after F.
Okay.
Or F should be relettered. I don't know which. And I didn't want to waste a lot of time with all that kind of stuff, but there might be some other examples.
Okay.
I had a couple of sub.
It's an existing code.
This is an existing code as it's codified now. In comments. Still wrong. I didn't know if we needed a definition section. I think I understand. Like when on page 4, the gray area under C, it says an account will be final. Give me a definition of what final means. I guess that's a total, sum, closed out, whatever. I didn't know if the final is a generally understood term. If it is, leave it in like it is. If not, we might need to add a definition as to what final is. It
means closed.
Closed out. Okay. On page 11, I know I'm skipping around. Oh, wait, excuse me, page 10. In the grayed out area that says C, when a meter is found to under-register by more than 5%, blah, blah, blah. You see that?
Mm-hmm.
In the area above that, it was talking about over-registering by 5%.
Right.
And if that's the case, then so-and-so shall pay for the test. There's no mention of who pays for the test if it under-registers. Now, I assume that's the customer. Because if they request a test of their meter and we find out, in fact, it's under-registering water volume, I would assume that that's a customer's obligation to pay for the volumetric test of the meter.
Yeah,
it doesn't say.
If it's reading accurately or under, then it would pay for it.
Okay, we might want to add words to say. Since in B it says over registering, and
B,
the customer shall be entitled to a refund based on the adjustment, and charge for the test. He's get a refund for the charge of the test if it over-registered. It should say in the under-registered file that you charge for the test.
Okay, how about if
he says, but in A it says that they will put up a appropriate testing charge required in advance of testing the meter.
Oh, if they do that in advance, we're okay.
Right, that's what it says in A.
Okay. Point taken. That's good. You only need to refund it. Okay, excuse me. And then on page 11, this is my last comment. I hope this will make sense. 3.03180. A1, minimum charges.
Mm-hmm.
It says by each customer for each 1 month billing cycle or 1 month billing period. You might want to change that to 2 months or 5 months or whatever.
Or is that 1 month?
Yeah.
Yeah,
5 months.
Yeah.
5 months.
Okay. Yeah. That's all I have.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I didn't need that one.
And staff has one correction, too.
Okay.
And that is to add to 3.03.030 on page 2.
Uh-huh.
If you look down, it has an A, B, C, D, E. Staff is requesting a new F in that section. To read as follows. All fees and charges become due and payable prior to the district filing the account. And this is at the request of Kathy, I think. Wanted to have some language in there. So if somebody was to come in and final the account, they wanted to have it clear. I want to be able to point to some legislation that would say you have to pay everything now.
Because another person may be coming in right after. It's kind of needs to be cleared out.
Right.
That makes sense.
Okay, I didn't have any conflict with the meetup, but it sounds fine. I think it's what we agreed to in conflict at the last meeting.
So the motion would be subject to the corrections and collating the appropriate code section, the sections.
Right. I just want to make sure everyone else is pretty happy with it. Did you have any questions or comments, other directors? Out to the audience, any public comments or questions regarding the proposed billing ordinance? I guess this is actually a public hearing.
Yeah, well, under the new Brown Act, every board action is now a public hearing.
Okay. This is our public hearing. Public, you can input. Or you can hear. You've already heard, right?
But there'll be another public hearing, too.
Okay. Then the chair will entertain a motion that maybe we should hear the ordinance and title on that, so we know what we're dealing with officially.
So the first one would be a motion.
Yeah, first, the chair will entertain a motion that we read the ordinance and title only.
I'll make a motion that we read the ordinance and title only.
Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion by Director Burbanks and a second by Director Simon that we read the proposed ordinance and title only. Let's see. Sure. Do we need a vote on that? Roll call vote. Yeah.
No, just regular.
Just regular vote. All directors in favor. Reading the title only, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, nobody's opposed. Mr. Seitz?
Yes, this is an ordinance of the Board of Directors and the Pommel Community Service District establishing chapters 3.03 and 4.03 in the Pommel Community Service District Code and amending chapters 3.04 and 4.04 in the Pommel Community Service District Code. Essentially, what this ordinance does is it establishes, revises the district's billing procedures for its water and sewer rates and customers, and certain code sections are placed in here to bring our prior code up to speed as far as current legislation on turnoff procedures.
Okay. Okay. Chair will entertain a motion then that we adopt ordinance number 95-81 with the struck through areas will be deleted and the gray areas will be added. Mr. Seitz's comments regarding the addition of Part F on page 2.
And the code sections will be collated.
Is there your motion?
I so move.
Motion by Director Simon and second by Director Mendoza that we adopt ordinance 95-81.
And set the public hearing for the next week.
And set a public hearing for
19th.
July 19th. Can we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Simon?
Yes.
Director Mendoza?
Yes.
Director Blair?
Yes. Okay, motion passed unanimously. And we'll have a public hearing on the 19th for further consideration. Let's move on to item number 8. Dental insurance, Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. President, the present dental plan, Delta Dental, we had a 3-year contract which expired August 1st, 1995. And staff went out and reviewed the plan and looked for other possible plans to equal to or better than at a, hopefully a savings to the district. And we ran across the Guardian plan, which is presented before you. The Guardian plan actually provides a better benefit than the existing one, approximately half the cost, if you have the savings to the district over $6,000. And we reviewed the plan. Reduced to all employees, and they are agreeable to switching to the Guardian plan from the Delta Dental. Basically, I think everything presented to the board, seeing if any questions, and just a motion would be in order to direct staff to proceed with changing the contract with the dental insurance.
The increase in the deductible, that's per person, I guess, is covered under the plan, right?
Yes,
it's per year.
Right. Three people. But you notice that in the basic plan, the Guardian picks up 100% if you go to one of their doctors, where the present plan only picks up 80%. And if you go to a non-provider, one that's not in the plan, it's the same as Delta Dental. And the major aspect is the same as Delta Dental, except if you go to one of their providers, it's a 60% coverage. So there's greater benefits in those two areas. And if you have a fill-in or two, it's more covered than 25% additional.
Right. The coverage is better.
Yeah, about half the premium.
Any more questions or comments?
I think the organization this is Target.
It's one of the major ones. I think Oceano's on it. And a number of we're going to call on Paul House on this one. I think she mentioned one of the top 3 insurance companies.
Yeah, there are other insurance companies that have been holding costs down. These guys have been just continually raising their premiums.
Help them.
Yeah, because I know the stuff that we're connected to the same thing. The other premiums have been coming down or they've been holding longer. And this just keeps going up. Right? I guess they figure they could charge them. They're going to do it. So I'd like to see somebody in there doing more competition.
The boards will address and make a stretch staff to proceed on the plan.
Okay, any public questions or comments on this? Okay, we need board action. I'll entertain a motion that we direct staff to switch to Guardian for our dental insurance.
Make a motion that we have staff pursue Guardian.
Do I have a second?
Second.
A motion by Director Blair, second by Director Fairbanks. All those in favor, say aye. Aye. All those opposed? Okay. No noes. Okay, so moving on to item number 9. This is Track 1749, subdivision of Sheridan Road and Highway 1. Mr. Jones?
Yeah, Mr. President, this item was brought to the board last time. The developer of Track 1749, Mr. Moore, is requesting that the intent to serve letter be increased from 15 lots to 36 lots, basically because the county has changed the land use elements. The board wanted to have a subcommittee review this matter, which subcommittee consists of Director Simons and Director Mendoza. And after their presentation, mentioned to the board that if they so approve the revisions of the intent to serve letter, that a number of conditions be imposed. One is that the improvement plans submitted and approved by the district are correlated with the other two tracts in the area, 1696 and 2172. And the developer must enter to and sign a plan check inspection agreement. All necessary easements be granted to the district and all system and other fees paid. And construct a water line, delivery line from the well site, proposed well site to the district system at Highway 1 and Well Road. And that the well site easement be granted to the district before the intent of letter, the intent to serve letter be issued.
We should note that the intent to serve was issued by the district on this year ago.
Yeah, so except that that's only for 15 months.
Right. Right. And, okay, the one condition, I just had one question before we get into it. The original January 12, 1993, well served letter said something about 200 GPM well to be demonstrated by a pilot well and E-log. Has that been done?
Yes.
And it's commensurate
day,
with the 200?
Probably minimum 400.
Okay. I was just wondering why you didn't carry over that condition to these others, but
that condition has been done.
That's fine. Okay. Subcommittee report. Yes, of course. No problem.
We were unanimous in our opinion that this would be a good program for the district, and we agreed with the conditions, and that's what our recommendation is, that it be accepted as such.
Expansion from 15 to 36 is approved.
This decision on my part was not without some hesitation or thought, because I think the changing of the conditions of the term returns project to some question as to whether this should proceed or not, and I'm stating that for the other board members who run in the committee. I'm not real comfortable with this. I can live with the fact that it can be expanded. I'm not comfortable with the fact that the conditions have changed on the district without new notice or it's just...
Oh, I mean that the land use change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just kind of dropped on us, and it doesn't really feel good to me. But in that meeting, I guess the consensus was that to avoid a long drawn out procedure and the possibility of litigation that the developer so the landowner so desired, that it was in the best interest of the district to just grant the request. And well, it just turned up on the board and how they feel about it.
Now, we can use this sort of as a learning experience too. I don't see us offering this type of agreement in the years to come, especially in light of this groundwater management plan we're trying to get off the road, and we're not going to probably be happy with dedicated wells and some other things when we have a quote-unquote overdraft and water shortage and a supplemental supply at the time. So.
Well, I recommend those. I think makes a good point. The district needs to be more proactive in activities going on in the community. When the land use change came up, the district should be really involved in that program, and it never was. You know, some of the, or the Southland area, this area, just getting the input into those programs, and hopefully, you know, the board is getting more involved, the district is getting more involved, on our item.
I think, in all fairness to the board, though, it's difficult to look at all of our standing agreements and evaluate every one based on what proposed changes in the general plan are. I mean, we come down here once every 2 weeks, and have a meeting, and hard to keep abreast of all our prior agreements and seeing what's on the books. I think I agree with the subcommittee. I don't feel good about it, but back in 93, we gave an intent to serve for 15. Whatever that rationale was at the time, it was approved by a majority of the members of the board. And while I don't feel great and comfortable with the expansion of the number of lots, I think, you know, to be a board of one word, we should probably go forward.
There's one additional thing. There's a second well site on, I don't know if it's on this property that's in this general area. My feeling is that the board should have some control over that other second well site.
Yes, it's in track 1696, and as I understand, coming through the interior, that would probably be dedicated to the district.
Should we make sure it is?
I'd have to go back and research it, but it's my understanding, talking to the engineer, that was one of the conditions.
Because there's another one coming up in there. I mean, didn't we get hooked into three of these, and there are three in a row? Like,
so there's three projects.
There's three projects. This is the second one.
Well, it's one of three projects.
Yeah. Well, we already approved the first one. We didn't really know what, you know,
well,
this one was coming.
Yeah, you want to track 1696. I guess the developer came in, the county wanted to allow it to only 1 acre parcels. I think some has a bit more history than I have to do, but the developer took the county on, and the county backed down and allowed them to win 1 acre parcels. Yeah, 1 acre parcels.
Mr. King.
It was
Kevin
Kennedy, and I can't remember who the owner of the property was, but it was right close to where they had well, what's the name of that water company that Star Holiday
Laguna Negra.
And they had 2.5 acre parcels, and they ejected this party. His was going 2.5 acres also, but he ejected because originally was going 1 acre. He wanted to live by that, and the county said no, and he's been taken to court, and the supervisor backed down and gave him 1 acre.
Entering
the door for
these
others to change too.
Anyway.
Okay. Any other public comments or questions? Any representatives from the project? Yeah. Did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, we would agree to abide by the conditions.
Okay, and your name is?
My name is Robert.
The recommendation of the subcommittee has been made by Director Simon and Mendoza. Any other questions from the board members? Okay, then the chair will entertain a motion that we complete this agreement by allowing the expansion of 15 to 36 lots and reissue an intent to serve with the conditions outlined by Mr. Jones.
I so move.
Motion by Director Simon. Do I have a second?
Okay.
And a second by Director Mendoza. All directors in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, no directors are opposed. Motion passing unanimously. Item number 10 is the approval of warrants. We haven't had time to breeze through those. Let's do them briefly. They're presented to us tonight. I didn't have any questions or problems with any of the board members.
What's the SPR idea?
That's our insurance.
Oh.
That's a district stand. That's okay.
Supposedly giving us all different kinds of ways to save money. Any questions or concerns? Any public comments or concerns on warrants? Okay. Our chair will entertain a motion that we approve the warrants presented then.
I'll make a motion we approve the warrants.
Motion by Director Blair. Do I have a second?
Second.
We'll give that one to Director Mendoza. I think he knows the Second by Director Mendoza. All directors in favor of approving the warrant, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Nobody is opposed. Motion passed unanimously. Item number 11 is other business. Our manager's report. Mr. Jones.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, quickly I'll go through this. Director Fairbanks and staff went down to the meeting in Buellton and listened to our legislative advocate, and it was very interesting. He indicated that basically what the county talking about, if you're an enterprise operation, you should probably maybe lose all your tax revenue in the future because legislature is moving in that direction, unless maybe that you don't have a non-enterprise operation to have the tax support. So something may the board think about. CCWA is proceeding with the state water water line right through the district plant. The meeting last week, I met with them in San Jose. The commission sat down and they basically started the passed resolution, which is the procedure of condemnation of property through our plant. And I responded with a letter asking them a number of conditions to be made prior to going forward in the litigation. We received correspondence from Cal City Water Company indicating that they are requesting a turnout on Orchard Road to serve them, and basically they're requesting a letter of support for their turnout. I told them it would probably be kids of death. Last time we went through there, they turned it down. If we supported, they turned it down.
Do they still have a 500 gallon per minute, or
500 acre feet
entitlement?
Yes. And
where does this alignment go? It's supposed to go through where we want to expand, right? Not through the current ponds?
It goes right through the current thing.
Right through the current
ponds. Yeah, there's an exhibit showing the outline of the plan, and then the right of way goes right through the middle of it.
That'd be real nice, especially if they have an earthquake and you have to repair a water line underneath the sewer plant.
That's kind of slick.
So.
It's supposed to go through and then replace the pond?
Yes. There's a letter, and they made an offer, and my question is to them, and I said, the compensation is unknown at this time. People are expanding the plant and the impact of their thing on our expansion. We don't know what it's going to be until that's determined. And I told them it probably take 2-3 months for the preliminary design to come out. We won't know what the compensation really will be.
Right.
And so we're in this area, and I notified Gary Taylor and John Jenks of the situation. They're looking through the process.
Now, once the state water line goes underneath there, we can conceivably operate our plant with no effects, right?
Yeah, the health department requests a 100-foot squat through there that we can't put anything on. They wanted a fence. I'm objecting to the fence because I'd like to park some equipment on it, but in the area to park equipment on. And so that's another negotiating item. They want a fence off. The health department wants a fence off. CCWA is arguing against the health department fence and same thing just with markers.
And this is not an offer to buy the property, this is buying an easement.
Okay. Yeah, and another thing I mentioned, if they're going to fence it, who's going to maintain it? So,
yeah.
But we're in this talking shit.
Okay.
The health department, why do they want this thing fenced? I mean, this is a pipeline, it's not supposed to be permeable, right?
Our engineer got with the CCW engineer and came up with some different proposals to mitigate the real impact on the treatment plant, and they called up the health department director and said, we'd like to come down and meet with you, and he said, don't bother, my mind's made up. So that's the type of individual. I've dealt with the gentleman for many years. He's also the same gentleman, said, don't turn on the tap as well because it's a polluted source. Every bad tea when I was here before it passed, and I lost. We lost the dentin well. I told him I'm turning it on, so he told me to turn it off. And he didn't tell me to turn it off. I told him with the worst health hazard. No water in the system like fires or flush toilets. Or a questionable supply that's never been proven wrong.
No, but I just can't understand, the guy wants to put a sewer plant right on top of his water pipe.
Well,
maybe he's gonna get into it. That would, and then they want to fence it off so that nothing.
Well, recently the line went around the plant. Now they're trying to follow property lines and not go across this so-called sensitive environmental area. It's where they call that sludge out.
Oh, man.
Anyway,
toad preserve.
anyway, we're trying to work around it as best we can.
Okay.
What's it going to cost them additional to do that?
Well, they're looking at, you know, $96,000 for these, plus the construction. But anyway, we're in a dialogue.
Where's your profit, Al?
Where's your profit, Al? There's some of your taxes.
It's not bad. And then the American Water Works Conference down in San Diego, I thought was very successful. Lara had gone down, and I attended a number of meetings and seminars on reverse osmosis membrane design. It was interesting, the town of El Centro in Southern California out in the desert, they used to have a storage tank, and their system operated a maximum of 40 pounds, normally around 15 pounds in their system. And they went through and eliminated the tanks and put in a pressure system and operated around 60 pounds. And there was a performance benchmark operation where they using communicated, don't use low rates with respect to degradation of the assets. And you have to keep your rates up so you're not supplementing your assets going down. And you mentioned French studies, they're looking at the technology as a strategy to use where U.S. indicates its risky aspect. You mentioned the French for the same operation operator, less cost per unit than the United States, mainly because the technology is more acceptable over there. They had advisory groups and how they work, and the Ventura desalting program they went through, and they indicated that as soon as they put their desalting plant ready to go and everything else, it started raining, it hasn't stopped raining since. So they said, you want to rain, plan a desalting plant. So, and then they talked about automatic meter reading. They have devices now to conserve water, and I think I mentioned before, they can push a button, turn off the service from the computer. And then probably the best attended session, had about 400 people, and that was Dr. Joyce. He spoke on dealing with difficult people in the morning and communication and listening in the afternoon. Very well done. I popped in off and on and got pieces and pieces of it. And they talked about groundwater banking, water quality mapping, and pollution sources. Quite interesting. A very unique one is a ocean transfer of fresh water. They call this the Medusa bag. It's a bag 3,000 feet long, 500 feet wide. You can haul it down. They gave an example from the Columbia River to L.A., hauling around 1,700 acre feet at one shot and delivered to L.A. for less than $200 an acre foot.
In a bag?
In a bag. Really, really interesting concept. And
it's not built, apparently. It's a concept.
Yeah, and the industry anticipates the biggest problem is, you call it the Jones Rule, no relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Is that if you go from one port in the United States to another port in the United States, you have to use American tugs, which are more expensive. And so they think it's cheaper to go to Canada and take the water. They go to the mouth of the river, and they got this bag, they open it up, and the water rushes in, they close the bag, and they have a tug move it down, go 60 miles a day. And it's a huge thing. They had an ocean tanker, he had a picture about an ocean tanker here in this bag, that's about so big, for the super tanker. And it's a diamond-shaped bag.
That came the bridge pitch.
Israel looking at it very favorably. They figure it'd be in operation 2 years in Israel because of the economics of it taking water from Turkey and moving across the Mediterranean. It's interesting, their son-in-law is an engineer for the city of Santa Maria, and they did a preliminary study here bringing in the Santa Maria to recharge the Santa Maria groundwater basin. And I told him, I said, can we work on a smaller scale? You know, and bring in maybe 800, which would be the lowest end, or 1,000 acre feet. And do that. I said, you know, I go back and look at it, because if you live in the FOMO, you know, MWD is going to be knocked on your door. He said, well, I have to go back and talk to the guy. So I don't know if anything can come of it. But it's a really interesting concept. They had an ethical model of mixing storage tanks of like our standpipe, how the water goes in, how it makes it mathematical, and then they had practical examples of dye tests. 7th Trend England, is one of the largest utilities in the world. They provide service to 8 million people. And they had a ton of things. And the speaker, a very interesting individual, and he said, well, we're two great countries separated by a common language, which I thought was great. And he used different terms, and they had a strategy. From, they had it all set up on a computer program. It goes from excellent, good, fair, poor, and the lowest model is awful. When against that offer, they replaced them.
Repulsive.
Yeah. And they had a discussion on performance budgeting line item versus a project thing. And brought an interesting aspect of some districts are selling fees ahead of the development. The developer comes in, they'll sell him 100 services, and he pays for them, and then he goes off and maybe builds a project a number of years later. So pre-selling of the services, which is an interesting concept. And then exhibits were just tremendous, and Dr. Blair can expand on the number of exhibits to talk to many people in there and brainstorm.
Yeah.
I don't
know you planned on it.
I brought some videotapes back
from the police from one.
All right. What's on the tape?
These plates that you cover holes with in the street, you know, and then they're made of plastic. And it, not only you can use them to cover holes with, you can use them for shoring, too.
Oh, okay.
And
for judges.
Two men can throw them in the back of a pickup truck rather than the metal ones where you have to pick them up with a backhoe.
Right.
So you want to get back injuries and stuff. They look pretty good, right?
Yeah, the exhibit hall covered two main areas.
The exhibit hall was like from here to Jocko's, to Little Jocko Square at least. I mean, it took a whole day almost just to go through it.
Huh.
It was very interesting. I even got a factory tour through it.
And then there's an indicating there's a PUC ruling on Cal Cities to serve the Hazel Lane area. Maybe legal counsel wants to briefly talk on that.
As you know, we went up to San Francisco a couple months ago and argued a case regarding a Southern California Water Company's service to the Hazel Lane area. The PUC Commission ruled against the district, and in so doing, it made two, what I think, critical findings regarding the issue that pivoted into favor of the Southern California Water Company. One is that Southern California Water Company is currently providing water service to the area at the request of Knoyer, who was the developer. And that Southern California Water Company has reimbursed the developer about $8,677.40 construction fees. I think the second major finding is that there's always uncertainty in annexations, whether or not the district would ever, the annexation would ever be successfully processed through the LAFCO, and the district would accept the annexation. So I think based on those two findings, the PUC decided to allow Southern California Water Company to expand its service areas into those residential areas that it had already been serving. The district it's not over yet, but the practical matter is that the district will file comments in opposition to the proposed ruling, but the odds of it being successful, us overturning what the administrative law judge ruled, I think, is slim to none. So the long story short is, how does this affect this area? Well, if they were to be annexed, you would now be having a water company serving them water, and the district would then be in a position of serving them sewer, which is, of course, a very bad situation to be in. And it's against district policy, so any future annexation, if it was to occur, would probably have to be conditioned on some type of condemnation of the Southern California Water Company service in this area.
Or they use septic.
Oh, that's exactly right. And,
they'll just be able to develop more acre ponds with NOAA.
Right. Anyway, that's the result of that.
And then in your packet, the boil engineer, unless the board has any questions. Boyle Engineering has given a progress report on the water and sewer master plan. The water and sewer calculations have been done, and they're indicated that they are slightly ahead of schedule. And then there's just a law brief, which information we get periodically. And then we received the system fees on the GOT for their payment to the bank. And then Mr. Cal Armstrong, the property at Black Lake Mobile Estates, has decided to go ahead with a three-lot subdivision, which two lots we've turned over to them. They will be paying all fees, although the district will be making the application.
Are those the lots that reverted to the original?
Well, there was one major lot there, which we pretty much abandoned the upper portion of it. And
right.
The agreement that we had is that we turn over the upper portion, keep the lower portion.
Okay.
And then we had an incident last Sunday where had a computer malfunction, and the operator didn't. The computer said we had 80 feet of water in the standpipe, but we only had about a half tank, and therefore had low pressure in the summer station area. And I got a phone call from one resident up there and came down and talked to the operator and basically got all the wells online. I say by that evening we started building pressure back up. The next morning we're operation, full operation.
There was a few hours there where it was.
Yes, there was a few hours there. There's water always out there, but very little pressure.
I'll take that joke to judge. One morning I came down here and talked about this. Bob's probably out there trying to fire up that water company again.
I'm back in business, boy.
I haven't gone out of business. I just got rid of one person. My well recovered, so I'm still. I don't know.
That's all I have.
Okay. I have water.
Any questions or comments, Mr. Jones?
Was that a mechanical? Was that a computer fit or a?
Yep, it was a computer. What happened is the strategy, what he called the strategy malfunction, and then tell the operating system to draw the graph or set the other pumps. Normally, it just locks on at 80 feet. Normally, as it drops down, it turns on the other wells, and so therefore it goes back up. But it didn't come down to tell the well to turn on, and the man himself would get pulling the tank down. So we didn't have the large wells running.
Do you know if there's some type of overlying software that can run with that program that reports trends? Because you and I spoke about that. You know, if it reports over a certain period of minutes or hours the same reading, you shouldn't have to rely on a person to look at a straight line. You know, we should do some type of trend analysis that says, hey, it's been giving me the same reading. Because in the natural situation, it should fluctuate up and down as pumps cycle on and off. I guess that's not built into this software, though. We might ask Juan or Larry or whoever it is. Whoever it is, I forgot the name. Whoever is our Paragon expert.
Lisa.
Lisa. Okay, Lisa. if that's a possibility.
And yeah, once we get all the bugs out, we can look at it.
Yeah.
Comment on that, this malfunction out there. At least one thing did for phone services.
Right. Another question, why is it always on Sunday?
Both events?
Both failures on Sunday.
It must have happened early because I know on Saturday I noticed the water pressure was kind of low.
A lot of water.
And I thought maybe because so many people were using it with, you know, the weekend. And then Sunday there wasn't any pressure. And then I had the neighbors, one called me and one came over wanting to know what happened. They called the district and the man on duty came out and he couldn't find it. Doug explained the next day what happened. But the water did come. I left Sunday afternoon because I came back. The pressure was back up. Not full, but better than it was.
All right. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question, if I may.
Yeah.
Doug, did you have any comments or hear anything about the carbon gel or other means of desal?
Clint Mill, the retired county engineer, took a tour of Lawrence Livermore Lab, and I asked him to look into it, and he said he talked to the people up there, and as soon as he receives their information, but I haven't heard anything more.
He didn't say that it was favorable or not.
We just indicated that it's a very large place up there.
Yeah. Yeah, it is large.
Yeah.
I have a question. One final question. On that thing with the PUC, Kenoyer, it said that it was based on Cal Cities was serving him.
At his request.
At his request. In other words, when he subdivided all that into 1 acre pieces, he asked for Cal Cities to serve him.
Right, and the issue there was is that when that all happened, Cal Cities did not expand its service area. It just sort of did it as a, on the side.
He came to the district and requested service first, but the district had a moratorium on annexation, so then he went to Cal Cities. His first request was to the district.
Must have been late 80s.
It was booming, and then things backed off. Now
so I think, if I recollect, the finding was 1989.
The moratorium began in 87.
What I'm saying is it's kind of ironic he wants to come to the district, and it's his actions that probably got his hands.
Yeah, 1989, people requested service from Southern California.
Any other comments or questions on the manager's report? Audience? Public? Okay. Item number 12 is director's comments. Any director's comments?
Oh, I have two.
Okay.
I have a question. One of them is, I understand that Hayes gave us an audit bid. That's the case.
It came in after we already approved climate and content.
Have they... was the response ever sent out?
No.
Because I think they have to at least send a response. And according to their statement, it was a little earlier than that, so I don't know if I guess what happened to
them. It came in while I think it's to me it looked like a form letter. I think it's just punched out their container and sent everybody to it.
Well, anyway, and also I've got some Internal Revenue Service things that they want to meet us again.
I am in problems with solutions with them right now.
Okay.
They actually
Yeah, it's one for each quarter and amounts to about $5,600
to $5,000. I was on the phone with them for over an hour last week and finally insisted on the resolution.
Now, is that a personal matter on that one?
That's the IRS in the district. They want
well,
Dina.
Why didn't they send it to you directly?
They didn't send it to me.
They
it was
sent
to
Hayes.
Oh.
Because Hayes was involved in another problem resolution prior to the time I came to the district. He's all resolved from payroll tax issues that were unresolved back prior to.
I thought the IRS has slapped a lien on your property.
But they're saying they're going to.
Some board action here, you know.
Why not?
Yeah, it sounded like I have a problem with the IRS. Like.
No, I have some letters.
Oh, okay.
The funny thing is they didn't send us certified
mail. That is kind of weird. Why is it still, is that penalties that are unpaid, or what is
what happened is, Joyce is not withholding Medicare tax from the employees. When I came here, I corrected that, and we paid all the back Medicare taxes. And I corrected it in 1991 on a 941C.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's what happened is when I sent in the forms, the IRS didn't apply it for the proper years, so it was generating back penalties and interest. And because the statute of limitations is running out, they slapped these on us without any prior explanation. I've written two letters and no response other than getting a letter. So I contacted all the that's what it relates to is genetic area.
I know a long time ago, not well, it's that many years ago, where they leaned the bank account improperly leaned.
Yeah, and I got all that money back.
And then that, yeah.
And this was another.